those little things aren't hard to do, but they really add up. And that's what, to me, wins championships, you know, and we were all willing to do those little things. It took 5 years to get it right for us. But that's something I hammer out even in the classroom too. Like, okay, you're handing in your paper, you don't have your name on it. Like, how am I supposed to know whose it is, right? Like, that's a little thing that makes a big difference. And to just teach kids accountability, having it in on time.
Welcome to Stories of His Glory, a podcast where coaches, athletes, and partners of FCA share powerful stories of how Jesus Christ is transforming lives through the world of sports. Each episode, you'll hear real stories of people who've experienced the life-changing love of Jesus. Stories that will encourage, challenge, and inspire you to see how God is moving in and through the world of sports and each of our lives. Stories of His Glory podcast is grateful to Copper Dog Waffles and Coffee for their support of FCA and youth athletics. Copper Dog is located on historic Main Street in Mandan and has the best gourmet waffles and custom coffee drinks. When you go, try my favorite, the Rookie, and definitely try pairing it with one of their amazing coffees. Stop in today for a unique experience, something unlike anything else you'll see in North Dakota. Sweet or savory, there's something for everyone at Copper Dog in Mandan. Welcome to the Stories of His Glory podcast. I'm Ron Jungling, and joining me today as a co-host is Evan Erickson. Today, we're excited to introduce you to Luke Mormon. Listen in as Luke shares stories of his success on the basketball court, how coaching became a passion of his, and how God changed Luke's life through a Bible study. Here's our conversation with Luke Mormon. Well, Luke, thanks for sitting down with us today.
Absolutely. Appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah, I'm excited for this conversation, even though you're wearing the NDSU hat, and we'll get to that. It's cool that in Christ, rivals can come together and have some fun.
So. Absolutely. Yep.
We could start today by going through a really extensive list of all the accomplishments you've had in your athletic career. Definitely had some accomplishments in your coaching career, like being Mr. Basketball in North Dakota, being a Division I athlete, being a state high school basketball champion, Summit League champion, the only person in this room that's played in March Madness, right?
Yep.
And we'll get to those things, but I'd imagine that's not how you introduce yourself today when you run into somebody. So how do you introduce yourself?
Yeah, you know, it's a little bit funny. I usually introduce myself now by, hello, I'm Luke Mormon. I'm 6'10", and yes, I played basketball because those are the questions. I mean, I walk the halls of the school I teach at, and it is, how tall are you? Yeah. You know, did you play basketball? So sometimes I'll throw in there that I wrestled or played hockey, and that's usually stumps the person. You know, they're a little bit too gullible, But I would introduce myself with maybe something kind of funny like that, and then, you know, spark the conversation from there as a teacher, as a coach, and that's where it usually takes us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so good. I remember my first time I ever saw you. We didn't know each other at the time, but we were playing high school sports at the same time, and we played Dickinson in football. And it was like, wow. First of all, your basketball team was huge.
Yeah.
Like, you guys had a bunch of big dudes, and a lot of you played football.
Yep.
And that's a really tall, I think you played receiver,
yep,
right? That's a really tall guy over there, receiver.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I remember there's nothing like Friday Night Lights of going out. And, you know, obviously football wasn't truly my sport, but still got to play as a starting wide receiver and kind of the Randy Moss throw the hand up and just throw it up and hope I can catch it over a D-back. But I definitely remember, too, some guys that were at NDSU while I was there that I played against in high school who just were animals and was always just scared to just get hit by those guys, you know? So I wasn't a speed demon or anything, but hopefully throw it up and catch a touchdown here and there. So
yeah, that's so good. You mentioned your size and that you have a size for basketball. So what was it about just kind of sports early in your life that drew you to them?
Yeah. You know, my dad was a coach. Dad was actually in the record books for basketball. He had 63 points and I think it was 42 rebounds. It's still in the state record books.
Wow.
And I've always like, okay, did you just throw it off the backboard to yourself? Because most teams don't get 42 rebounds in a game.
Yeah.
and there was no 3-point line back then or anything, but, you know, I think watching him play City League as a little kid, you know, hearing the stories of him, kind of gravitated that way and just going to practices with him and stuff, you know, it just kind of became that way. But as far as basketball, you know, I would say football, and then I also did track. Those didn't come as easy for me, for sure, but basketball did. I really tried to relate that to kids now of like, I wouldn't have made it if it wasn't for my height. You know, I wouldn't have made it at the next level. They took a chance on me because of that. Where you put me at your guys' height, my work ethic just wasn't where it needed to be for sure, because it came easy for me. And I never, you know, it was dad saying stuff to me, right? Oh, it's my dad. And I try to tell kids that now, like, there's a million of you out there, right? At your size. And so how are you going to set yourself apart? I really wish I would have thought of that back then, but I didn't, you know? And so that's always been my main goal with coaching now, is just telling kids, like, you got to give it more. You got to keep working harder, because that's how you're going to set yourself apart. And it's just harder these days anyways for recruiting purposes and stuff. So,
I really have to appreciate the fact that you lumped Ryan and I in together. Yeah. You guys' height, because Ryan's probably what, 6'2", 6'1", 6'2". I'm about 5'8", so I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
That is the bell curve right there, right? That is the bell curve. There are millions of people that are my height and Evan's height, not yours. That's so good. I think what you brought up is really interesting about, like, work ethic. When did that hit you? Man, like, your height was your advantage. And maybe your work ethic didn't match up to what it could have been.
Yeah.
So when did that hit you where now you're like helping people see that?
Yeah. That was definitely my freshman year at college. I was told I was going to redshirt. We came in with five guys. All four of the five were, and the other one was Ben Woodside, who's the all-time leading scorer now, 5'10". And he was told he could choose. Well, with the transition we were in, we had a 4-year suspension from going to Division One. So if he plays right away, he has no chance of ever being in a postseason tournament. By redshirting, those 4 years would go by and he'd have your senior year. So we all stuck it out together. But, you know, I found out real quick, speed wasn't there, strength wasn't there, quickness, you know, all that stuff. And so the redshirting process was phenomenal for me. In my first 2 years, I gained 60 pounds, went from I remember I was 201, you know, I had to add that 1 pound on there to make sure I was just a hair above 200. But for my size, you know, 6'10", 200 pounds, very, very skinny and weak, you know, didn't lift in high school much and things like that. And so those first couple of years were crucial and just a massive development for me. And just had to find out really quick, I'm either going to make this or I'm not, you know, and I think that is hard for some kids to make that jump and why some maybe give it up, because it's a job. You know, we were there, we didn't get to go home during the summer. You know, we were there doing things every day of the week, you know, weekends were off in the summer and stuff, but it's a 12-month gig. And so, there were times it was super tough. Those guys are my best friends now. And there was five of us. So like that made it easy. I can see where a kid now, you're by yourself. You're the only one redshirting. That'd be really tough. You know, you don't have the other people that are going through it with you and to talk to about it, where we did. And so I think that's what made us a really good team too, is we went through it all together and we were all there for 5 years together, which is unheard of now, right? Guys are
for sure
in and gone. So that was definitely the year where it had to start clicking for me.
Yeah. Let's go back a little bit before your time at NDSU, because you had quite a bit of success in basketball in high school and you played on a really good team. And let's just talk a little bit about that. Like there are a lot of people that know your name now that you've coached for a long time. If they're listening to this, let's talk about maybe your progression in high school to getting to the point where, you know, you're best basketball player in the state of North Dakota. So what are some maybe things as you look back that you learned along the way throughout your high school career?
Yeah. So my freshman year, we brought in a new coach and a legendary coach now, Dean Wincheski.
Yeah.
You know, definitely turned the program around. And so my freshman year, his rule was if you're a freshman, you play freshman. And so all of us, you know, guys that were buddies and stuff, stuck it out together there. And I think that first year, if I'm correct on this, I want to say they were like 2-18, something like that. Wasn't good. You know, the next year, I want to say it was like 9-9. And the next year after that, even, you know, more of a winning year. And then my junior year, we won state, you know. And so I got to play a little bit as a sophomore. I want to say it was maybe 8 to 10 minutes a game. But yeah, like you mentioned in the beginning there, we had, I think our starting lineup my junior year was 6'8", 5". I was, you know, 6'9", 6'10", 4". 6'3" was 6'6". Our 2 was 6'5", and our point guard was 6 foot. You know, and the first guy off the bench was a guy named Brett Bauer, who was 6'6", about 280, who went and played line for the Sioux, you know? And so we were, and then the 7th guy was 6'4". We were just the biggest midget team out there, you know? So Mavericks now, but that was always the classic joke, obviously. Yeah. And so, I mean, that obviously made us good just because of that. Right. Out rebounded pretty much everybody all the time and could pound the ball inside. And so, but yeah, I do remember one story that kind of one of the high school memories I really remember as a younger kid was we were at Minot and I think I was playing in a JV game and I kind of got in a little scuffle with a guy from Minot. I don't remember who the kid was. And I remember my dad coming up to me after the game. He just grabbed me by the jersey and he started walking me up to Winchesky where he was sitting with the seniors, just kind of like in front of all those kids was like, you know, do you allow this stuff on varsity? And he's holding my jersey of how I acted in the game. You know, I thought I was kind of a tough guy at the time and that ended really quickly up there in the stands. I just remember that kind of being a moment of like, man, I better play the right way when I'm out there, not be doing things like that where you might get a technical or something. I mean, yeah. The refs had to kind of stop it, you know, it was just, but that was kind of a pivotal moment there. I remember being like, man, the varsity coach just watched me do this, you know, and now my dad's calling me out in front of him and the seniors and things like that. It was like, I better change my mentality. And then as I got older too, it was just kind of this, people would say kind of just would flip this switch when I was playing, just play way more aggressive and stuff was something I had to figure out too. And, but yeah, it was, those were some great years. And then we lost a lot of those guys going into my senior year. And we lost to, I believe it was Century in the play-in game at the Civic Center to, I remember Kenyon Wingenbach was one of the kids, a friend of mine now. It was kind of funny, but that was tough to swallow a little bit, you know, winning state and then not even making state the next year.
For sure.
But definitely all opportunities that taught me something.
Yeah.
You know?
As you kind of wrapped up your high school career going into college, what was, you know, kind of your faith journey? What did that look like as you got ready to go to college?
So I grew up Catholic, went to church every Sunday, went to what we called CCD. I don't know, I'm not sure if that's what they still call it, but did all those things. But I feel I really never had that relationship until I got to college. And I got a great opportunity, I think 2 years ago at the state tournament to talk and share my story to a bunch of young men that were in the facility that day. But essentially, I got asked to go to a Bible study in the dorm room. I believe it was my sophomore year. So up until that point, you know, really wasn't going to church my freshman year of college, wasn't digging into faith really at all. My roommate who definitely, you know, if I would have known nothing about him and someone said, is this guy a Christian? I would have said, yeah. But just by the way he approached himself, everything he did, you know, you could see it from the outside. So he asked me and one of my best friends and definitely said, yeah, I'll go, you know, let's check it out. So we went there. It was me, him, and our RA, resident assistant, basically just kind of started going through a little devotional, read some Bible stuff. And he got to this point where he said, you know, what percent do you think you're going to heaven? And being a math major, I was, okay, well, that's a pretty easy question. It's probably 50-50 right now. You know, that's probably where I'm at. And then he goes to my teammate, Brett, and asks him, and he's like 100%. And I looked at him kind of like, whoa. How does he know that, you know, and kind of wish I had that confidence to just say that, but no, I remember kind of like starting to sweat a little bit and being a little uncomfortable with the answer I just gave, you know? And so he starts talking about why I answered that way. And well, I've done some good things and I've definitely, you know, sinned and made bad choices. And then he kind of started talking about the gospel and different things. And by the end, I basically gave myself to Christ and, you know, said a prayer and definitely my mindset shifted that day.
Yeah.
And understood, like, it's not about what I've done. It's not about everything I've done bad. It's asking for forgiveness. It's understanding that, you know, Jesus died for us. And I remember that day, like it was yesterday, you know, on my knees in that dorm room, you know, praying and asking for forgiveness and understanding. So then after that, started going to Chi Alpha, you know, met Josh Schrodahl through all that. And the lead alls, if you know those guys, Dave and Nate, and really got involved with some of those things. And I mean, just felt so much more relieved, so much more. Did I still, you know, make bad choices here? Yeah, I did and still do, but definitely had a different perspective on my faith and wanted to help others. And I think that's a big thing that took me into FCA today and to teaching and coaching is, you know, there's more to it than just the sport. Right, you know, and to try to help lead kids in the right direction with this stuff too. So,
yeah.
Stories of His Glory is brought to you by North Dakota Fellowship of Christian Athletes, where our mission is to lead every coach and athlete into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ and His church. Across North Dakota, FCA is on the ground in weight rooms, huddles, and classrooms, building up bold leaders of faith through sports and scripture. Whether it's a student athlete discovering Jesus for the first time, or a coach finding strength in community, lives are being changed every season at FCA. Want to be a part of the movement? Visit fcand.org to get involved or support the mission. Now, let's get back to the story.
Yeah, so Winkleman's with you, right? And
yep.
You had talked about sharing at the state basketball tournament a couple years ago. And just to kind of bookend a little bit what you were talking about the closeness you are to your teammates from NDSU, right? When you're sharing, and everybody knows it's been advertised that you're going to be the speaker at state basketball, Winkleman comes over to Bismarck to hear you speak.
Yep.
And I think that's such a cool picture of what it looks like in the body of Christ and how people are for each other,
yep.
that he would take time out of his day, come over here, sit in at a breakfast to hear you share that story that includes him,
yeah.
essentially, but how cool that he would be willing to do that.
Yeah, I could give 10 stories like that, you know, of us showing up for each other. One of those guys that I went to college with, his dad just passed away here a couple weeks ago. Unfortunately, I was not able to be there, but a lot of the guys did. I mean, yeah. We had a couple guys from Sioux Falls drive up there to be at that funeral. And I mean, it's things like that. We were in all of each other's weddings, right? We've been to kids' birthdays of each other to spend. Woodside came out for Christmas last year. I mean, kind of got, you know, stranded in or didn't have family around, whatever, and brought them out. And so we take the time to do that. We find the importance of that. And honestly, we talk about that a lot now of like, is that still going to exist in sports, you know, with the NIL stuff and kids leaving for money every year? Like, yeah, at the time we probably all would have left, you know, right? You throw $500,000 at a kid, they're gone, right? I mean, that's a lot of money, $1 million. Well, this kind of memories we talk about now is priceless, right? You can't put a number on this. Looking back, kids probably don't get that.
Yeah.
And won't ever maybe have that, you know? So who are your closest friends? You know, I've always heard like your high school friends maybe aren't going to be your closest friends when it might be your college friends or whatever. And definitely there's people whose high school friends are their best friends. But like for me and for all of us, it has been our college roommates, friends, teammates. And again, that's why I think we were a good team, because we were definitely smaller, not as quick, not as athletic against a lot of the teams we played and beat. Or hung with, you know, in the NCAA tournament playing Kansas. I mean, multiple NBA guys, right? There's no reason we should play with them. But it's because of how we worked together. And we knew kind of every move each guy was going to make because we'd been there so long together. So,
yeah. So let's dive into the sports side a little bit at NDSU. You talked about how you all redshirted your first year. And then, so this was the NDSU transition from D2 to D1 back in 2004 or 2005 is when you redshirted.
Mm-hmm.
You got that 4-year kind of postseason ban. So you're playing, was it the Summit? What was the conference you were in at the time?
So we were playing an independent schedule for, I think, 2 years of just literally any game we could kind of get. I remember NJIT, New Jersey Technical Institute. Yeah. I don't even know.
New Jersey Institute of Tech.
Yeah. There you go. Kind of the letters messed up there. But I mean, teams like that, it's like, I don't even, do they still exist? I don't know. But, and then it was, then it became the Summit League. That was tough because I remember, so we all started as freshmen, sophomores, juniors, seniors together. One of the guys that I talked about that came in ended up getting multiple concussions and had to be done playing on the team. And so through that time, the other four of us, again, freshmen all the way through senior, and I did get an injury through that time and was out for about 8 games for knee surgery. But, you know, I remember Tim Miles was our coach those first couple of years. And I remember being in, I want to say it was Idaho State. We lost a close one and we had come down to the end. We just lose every time. And I remember him coming in the locker room and teared up, and he kind of got choked up and just said, you know, it feels like we got this massive iceberg in front of us and we're chipping away with just a little chipper, whatever you call that. And just can't get through, just cannot get through. And we're working so hard and you just can't see the end of it, you know, but to told us to just trust the process here, to keep working and we'll get there. You know, a couple of years later, we beat Wisconsin, who I think was number 13th in the nation on like a 60 some game home winning streak. We beat Marquette the next year, who was ranked in the nation at the time. Then we started struggling to find games of teams that were supposed to be guarantee games, right? Nobody wanted to play us anymore. Right. Almost kind of what you see with football a little bit now, you know? And so, all kept working away. But every year would just come to an end, no matter how we did it.
Right.
Just your season's over, done, and everybody else gets to kind of start playing in tournaments. So that was always tough. but we kind of saw the light at the end of the tunnel. Like we've been working for this for so long. We're not stopping now.
Right.
And that's when we made it to the Summit League tournament, and Woodside hits kind of a last second runner off a screen from me and makes it, and they inbound it, take two dribbles and shoot it from a little past half court and just rims out. I mean, could have made it, and this whole story is completely different, you know, but misses. And then we draw Kansas in Minneapolis, which couldn't have been a better situation, you know, for right. fans. Yeah. I want to say there were 17,000 fans and 14,000 were Bison people, you know, so that day. So I mean, it was like a home game in the Metrodome.
For sure.
Which was a cool atmosphere too.
So what was that like? Selection Sunday? Take us through that a little bit. What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, we all get brought into the BSA and all sitting up on a stage and a bunch of fans there, kind of just a like a fan day type thing, you know, signing autographs, doing things. And
because you knew you were going to get a tournament bid because you won the Summit.
And what had kind of happened before that down at Oral Roberts was we thought that we might have a chance of getting in even if we lost, but then somehow our coach got wind of like talking to some committee or something that sounded like all of a sudden that they weren't gonna allow a team from the Summit in if we were the ones to lose. So then it kind of came down to like, we have to win where we thought we might have that opportunity. So going into that kind of tournament, we were kind of told like, it's not looking like we're making it in if we guys don't win it. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that day was really cool and getting to see it on CBS and they popped into us quick. We're all cheering and stuff. Yeah. Yeah, it was a pretty surreal moment and something I'll definitely never forget. And take a bus down there. Most teams got to fly to where they're going, you know, so we got to kind of stay in our own beds up until that point and go down the night before. But yeah, our coach, Saul Phillips, was awesome. He was, you know, really a coach's player. Our film right before the game, he popped up a YouTube video of like cats flying into mirrors and stuff. Like he's like, all right, we're gonna pop up the film of Kansas here, and like pops up that, wrong tape, you know, just to get us joking around and loosen up. But that's the kind of guy he was, you know, just keep it loose and in the moment and make sure we're always having fun.
It's cool.
It's awesome.
So in taking some of those experiences from great coaches like him and maybe even from your dad, you know, you talked about him keeping everybody accountable.
Yep.
What are some of those life lessons that you now, who is somebody who's super excited about impacting kids' lives and super passionate about that, what are some of those lessons that you try to use in your coaching now today?
I think the biggest one, and this is into the classroom too, as a teacher, is just hard work, right? Yeah. I mean, like, I feel to an extent that that's being lost a little bit. And I don't know if it's a social media thing, if it's a just things are easier access for kids, but just, you know, that can take you a long ways. And that was proven with our group, just working together, teamwork, you know, that not one of us as an individual can do this by ourselves. Yeah. And like I said, Ben Woodside, still the all-time leading scorer to this day. I don't think that'll be broken, but you know, he will be the first to say that the other four positions were just as important as his, right?
Yeah.
And Winkleman was the number two leading scorer. And, you know, so we had one and two. But yeah, I remember even a little side note here, but like there, social media wasn't really a presence when we were there, but there was like blogs. And I remember reading a Bison blog one time and it's like, why does this Mormon guy, why does he even play? He averages 4 points and 3 rebounds a game. Well, can't we find someone better to start? You know what? We got Woodside. Well, you know, in my eyes, it's like I was in there to defend and rebound. Yeah. High school was different. I was, you know, I think my senior year was 22 points, 12 rebounds a game. But I accepted that role and I loved it. Like, I wanted to guard the other big guy. You know, I wanted to stop him. I wanted to rebound, do what I can, dive on the floor, take charges. Like, I embraced that role and absolutely loved it. But from a standpoint of fans, which I try to tell kids this too, like just because you don't score the most points doesn't mean you're not part of this team or a huge part of it. Now, the person in the crowd that doesn't know basketball as well, they're looking at the box score, who has the most points, that's the best player, right?
Yeah.
But if you're in there just to defend the other team's best player for us, then do that for us and you are just as important, right?
Right.
And so that's been, you know, part of it. And just, we always stress the little things, right? You got to do the little things. I'm coaching seventh grade girls right now. You don't show up with your warm-up jersey, we're running. Like, why didn't you bring it, right? That we got to think of those things. Yeah. You need to have it. Or you're a couple minutes late. What? Why are we late? You know, if you're seeing a teacher, fine. But like, just the little things, boxing out, right? Rebounding, talking, communicating on defense, on switches, or whatever it may be. Those little things aren't hard to do, but they really add up. And that's what, to me, wins championships, you know? And we were all willing to do those little things. It took 5 years to get it right for us. But that's something I hammer out even in the classroom too. Like, okay, you're handing in your paper, you don't have your name on it. Like, how am I supposed to know whose it is, right? Like, that's a little thing that makes a big difference. Right. And to just teach kids accountability, having it in on time. Someday you're going to have a job and you got to be there on time.
Yeah.
Okay, get into class. Don't be tardy. Why are we tardy? Well, I was talking to my friends in the hallway. Well, that's not okay. You know, yeah, that's the fun thing to do. Mm-hmm. But it's not the right thing to do. Yeah. And to try to hold kids accountable to that, I do think sometimes, you know, kids don't understand until it's down the road.
Yeah.
But I'll even hear stories now that I've coached so many kids. Some of these dads have had my dad. And I remember back in high school, like, nobody liked my dad. He was the tough teacher, the math teacher. But it's funny to hear now, I'll run into parents and they're like, He was my favorite teacher.
Yeah.
He was the best. Like, he really made us do something. And it's interesting to hear that now when they're parents, you know, they get it. But back then it's, you know, me talking to my friends and stuff, he was not my mom, they loved her. You know, facts teacher, food, your mom's the sweetest, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't want to have your dad, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's how it'll go with me too. Just like down the road, they'll understand why you did these things and why you cared for them. You wanted what's best for them. But don't maybe really get it in the moment.
Yeah. I think that's important to teach and coach. Like, my philosophy as a teacher and coach was, I want the 26-year-old to like me. I don't need the 16-year-old to like me. Like, when they're 26 to look back and be like, oh, I get it now.
Yep.
You know, I think that's really important. I think that's awesome.
Very good. Yep.
So you graduated from NDSU. You had this really tight group of guys around you. You had talked about your involvement in Chi Alpha. Did you move to Bismarck right after that?
Yep.
Then?
Right. Yeah. Got hired in April or May to come to Bismarck for that next following year. Yep.
So what was that? Because obviously college, a small group that was close knit, that was tight with you, was a really important part athletically, I'm sure academically and spiritually. So what was it like to leave that group? Yeah. What were you maybe looking for?
Yeah, so it wasn't as hard as it maybe sounds for the fact that out of those five guys, the one who had to be done due to concussions, he was staying in Fargo, but, you know, we definitely weren't as close with him through that time because he was just off the team, but still got honored his scholarship, which was awesome of NDSU to do stuff like that. But out of the other four, Woodside going to play overseas, Winkleman going to play overseas, Nelson going to play overseas. So they're going to be a long ways away.
Yep, for sure.
So for me, I wanted to stay in Fargo. But the flood happened that year.
Oh, yeah.
And so there was a position at West Fargo. My wife's from Lakeville. So at the time, like, her parents were in Minnesota. If we're in Fargo, we're halfway to them. We're halfway to my parents in Dickinson. You know, it's a pretty good spot for us to stay. I get a call from my dad and he's like, hey, there's this school, Simley Middle School, who's going to be hiring. They got a couple math positions. Mike Heilman was my high school principal at Dickinson. He was now the assistant superintendent or maybe superintendent of Bismarck. And so my dad talks to him, hunts with him. And so Mike's like, hey, he should come out here and interview for that. So got in on the interview there. I was looking at it as more of an opportunity because of the flood. Things were delayed in Fargo.
Yeah.
They told me I'd have an interview and couldn't tell me obviously anything from there. Mm-hmm. And the guy that was the principal at the school I was going to interview for in West Fargo was Beulah's head coach when I was in high school for basketball. Mm-hmm. So I had that connection there, which, as you guys know, it's all about connections these days, absolutely. Right? Of who you know and things like that. So I looked at it as perfect. This is a great opportunity to come. I've never had an interview. I don't even know what that looks like. Maybe I can get those nerves out of the way. So came and interviewed at Simley and driving home, got offered the math position. And I think Mr. Real definitely knew what he was doing with, you know, hey, I'll give you a couple days, knowing that about a week later, those interviews would start back up in West Fargo. And so I just remember telling my wife, hey, I got offered this. And she just said, well, is it like Dickinson, Bismarck? And I said, no, it's better than Dickinson. No offense to the Dickinson people listening. But I said, there's the river, there's a lot of things to do there. And we discussed it as a family and talked about, what if I don't get the job in West Fargo? Now what? Now we're, you know. And so we got her on board, my wife Kelly on board at Simley as well, as like a speech aide.
Yeah.
And she wasn't even going into teaching stuff and loved it. And that's how she went back to school and ended up becoming a teacher as well. And so it all worked out. And I did accept the job and we moved out a few months later and stuff. So I do miss Fargo, but I love Bismarck here and you know, the hunting and all the things I grew up with and all that stuff too has been awesome. So
for sure. How did you find that community? Cause I know it's community matters to you.
Yep.
So how'd you find that community when you came to Bismarck?
Yeah. I mean, like, some of the guys I played with in the Wingenbach, right? I actually ended up moving in next door to him, and his parents were four houses down from them on the street I first moved into in Bismarck. So, you know, like it didn't take long to meet some people, and some of my best friends here in Bismarck now I teach with. And Coach Mattern called me when he heard I was moving to town, said, "Hey, I just got hired on at Century. This is going to be my first year. Do you want to come on staff with us?" And absolutely, sure. You know, I didn't know anything really about the teams, high school teams. I'd kind of fallen away from that, obviously, for a few years. But that was a guy coming in to try to kind of change the mindset of Century at the time, because for the longest time, Bismarck High was kind of the basketball team, the tougher team always in the state. And whether they had football guys or basketball guys, they were just going to outwork you. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was... It didn't take long to kind of get well connected. Right, I think more for my wife to find some friends. But again, all those guys had wives and welcomed her in and stuff too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's awesome. So, you and I have kind of got to know each other or build our relationship more on the fact that you're a huddle leader at Simley. I'm obviously an area rep here with FCA. So, tell us a little bit about the huddle that you guys have going on at Simley. Let's start here. What started that? Kind of the wheels turning for you to want to start a huddle or be part of the huddle at Simley, and what's it look like now?
Yeah, I honestly don't know how I got in. I can't remember how I got involved my first year coming in, but I want to say it was Ron Metz and Lynn Gress were running our FCA huddle there. And it consisted of like 3 to 4 kids. And it might have been because at the time, you know, those kids got to pick if they went to BHS or CHS. Yeah. And one of them, was the Kraft family, and I believe it was Chris Kraft, was a basketball player for us at Century, and he was a 9th grader, and he kind of led the huddle for us there. And I don't know if I got talking to him at a practice or how that all went down, but I ended up just helping, just showing up on every other Friday or once a month or whatever we did at the time. And it was, I remember it was him and his sister and a couple other kids. I mean, maybe 4 of us, but he would kind of lead that little Bible study there. Just really enjoyed it, right? I mean, whether it was, I remember those guys talking, whether it's 1 kid here or 4 kids here or 10 kids here, like it's worth it, right? And okay, so I kind of just came in and was a spectator for a few years. And then, you know, it changed. And also Janet Lindquist, a longtime teacher there who came in and really led the group well. And again, have been more changes since then. But then we kind of lost our area director a few, you know, years back. And some of the huddles started to kind of fade off a little bit, but we kept ours pretty strong. And again, it was just every year I'd look forward to it. We'd start off the school year getting some kids from the year before, walk around to home bases and tell kids kind of what it is. And just year after year, it's just growing and growing. It's been so cool to see the kids coming in. Some of them you're thinking, you got this kid in class, you'd have no idea they'd want to be there or show up. And whether they're there for the donuts or they're there to learn more about Jesus, it doesn't matter. But it's been so cool just to year after year to see 6th graders come in, you know, maybe brothers or sisters of older kids and want to be a part of it, or just completely new kids. And to be able to get to know those kids on that level, because obviously we don't have all of them in class. Right. So to get to know them and know their name, you know, say hi to them in the halls, but just even up to this year, we've just seen some really cool things from kids staying afterwards, taking their phone out, playing a Christian song and putting their hands in there, worshiping, and then holding hands and saying a prayer afterwards, you know, 7, 8 kids. Just the other day, there was like 6 girls and this boy was walking out and they asked him, "Hey, do you want to pray with us?" And I'm thinking, there's no way that kid's saying yes, right? You're a boy with 6 girls there. You're so nervous, but yeah, sure. Can I? Yeah. He comes over, he's singing with them and stuff. And from what I saw, not real close friends where he feels really comfortable with that, but he did it. Right. And for them to welcome him in like that and ask him, he was just kind of hanging around in the room.
Yeah.
I haven't seen things like that for the time that I've been there, right? Yeah. And so cool for that. We've had some kids want to tell their story. Hey, can I come in and kind of tell my story? And that takes some guts to do that at that age, right? And so obviously FCA is built around student-led, but such a tough age for kids to do that. And so we've really tried to push them, hey, you know, who wants to pray at the end? Can we get someone to do that? And I always tell, I remember when Jordan Williams asked me at my first men's Bible study, like, "Hey, next week, can you pray?" And like the whole week I'm thinking, what am I going to say? I can't screw this up, right? Like I'm sweating when it's my turn and down in that basement of his, you know, trying to pray. And then after it was one time, I was like, what am I doing here? Like just speak what's on my heart. And it's now it's just natural, right? But like for any kid at that first time, it's got to be tough. But now kids will read, like who wants to read? You know, multiple hands are going up where it used to be kind of harder, I think, for kids. And once they start to see that modeled a little bit, it's just been so cool to see the kids run with this and where it's even going to go, right? So, yeah.
No, that's awesome. I think you know, even from how awesome of a job you guys have done at Simley and in your huddle, we've even seen that effect going to the freshmen that then transfer into now legacy. And so I just think that it's so encouraging. To the work that you guys are doing obviously matters. I think we all recognize that, but that you guys are doing an awesome job down there too.
Yeah. I mean, I told the kids this the other day, it's not us as huddle leaders who's making the difference, right? And you guys know that too. It's, you know, what the kids are doing and what Jesus is doing through them, you know, and so, and how he's using us, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But we actually just, for Thanksgiving coming up here, we had the kids, I printed off some FCA cards I made and had them personalize it a little bit. And they're going to, they took it to a teacher on Friday, or on Monday, they get to invite that teacher into our huddle next Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And I'm super pumped for that. I've been thinking about this for a long time, because I've told the kids, like, all of you have stuff going on at home. We know that there's something that we're dealing with that's not fun, right? Yeah. With whether it's our parents or our friends or sickness, whatever it might be. Well, the teachers are the same way. They all have probably things worse than even maybe you're dealing with as a kid right now, you know? And I think sometimes kids think we sleep at the school, right? They see us out at the mall and it's like, oh, you see Mormon at the mall? Can you believe that? Like, it's like, oh, we got to go do things too, guys, right? And so for them to invite in a teacher, I'm just so excited to see what that's going to do. Because even from prayer at the pole, we had some teachers email like, do you guys do this every month? I want to attend. And I was like, well, it's kind of a once a year thing, but maybe we should make it a once a month thing. You know, like, yeah, right. How powerful they thought it was as a teacher, or we had some admin pop out. Like,
yeah.
How cool is that? And so I've told the kids so many times this year already, like, if we can get more teachers wanting to attend this stuff and kids together, like, what could we do for our school and how could this change our school?
Yeah.
And so I'm just pumped to see. I think I told them, we all can't pick the same teacher, right? I don't want one teacher to show up here that's getting 40 thanks from kids, because they're going to have to stand up and say why they're thankful for that teacher. And so they took them out and I said, well, the max we can have is two. So they were writing names up on the board and until the point. And so I'm super excited for Wednesday to see
that's awesome.
What happens.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I know that you've done something similar to that a number of times now, and you really have empowered the kids in your huddle to make an impact within the school, within the adults at the school. I think it was last year or 2 years ago, you did just a thank you card to all the adults. And just know that you've told me stories of the impact that that has when somebody sees not just the teacher that everybody likes, but the custodian and other adults in the building. So I just think that's a really cool model for how a huddle can serve the greater community that is the school.
Yeah. Yep. I told the kids too, this, like, I haven't been given a bunch of cards throughout my 16 years of teaching, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. The couple that I've got were very, very meaningful.
Absolutely.
One of them was from a senior at Legacy who just said, you know, hey, thanks for putting FCA on at the middle school. Like, that's what kind of started my faith. And it was like, man, that is, I didn't know if we're ever making an impact or if, you know, like, for getting through to anybody. If it is the donuts, great. But like, to hear that, I could name the kid right now and visualize who it is. Right. Yeah, I mean, like, it's, now, if I get a card every single day from a kid, it just doesn't mean as much, right? And so I told the kids that too. Like, we're inviting in people who, you know, maybe you don't have a great connection with them as a kid. How powerful could that be if you go give this to them and invite them in? Maybe that changes your relationship with them, you know?
Yeah.
Cool to see what happens on Wednesday or so.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's going to be so cool. Okay. So as we wrap up today, I just think it's really cool. And I want to highlight this fact that when I came on staff, like you said, after COVID especially, a lot of the huddles disappeared in Bismarck, and Simley did not. And Simley was all through that process. I'm sure numbers were affected and all of that stuff, but you guys like persevered. It was like just such a cool thing. And so you've led a huddle at Simley for your entire, you know, been a part of it for almost all of your career. And we have a lot of new huddle leaders in the state. A lot of people that are stepping into it for the first time. So as a veteran huddle leader, what are maybe some advice that you can give to a new huddle leader of things that you've learned? They can jump some of the difficulties maybe you ran into and like take, oh, these are a couple of really good practices that you would encourage somebody to use.
Yeah, I would say early on, you know, using your resources, since you guys have come on staff. Like, you guys have been so awesome, you know, to, hey, what do you guys need? Just, I mean, even to the bracelets, like the kids love that stuff, right? Yeah. Things that we might not think of as a new huddle, that there are things out there for us. You need Bibles? Hey, we'll get you Bibles, right? Yep. And so to have those things and to ask for them is fine. You know, I mean, the worst you guys can do is say no, right? So,
right.
But I'd say that, or asking other huddle leaders in your area, you know, hey, what do? Bounce ideas off each other. I remember calling Baron Blanchard multiple times, asking what they do at Horizon. That's kind of when I first started taking or leading myself, you know, with the kids. So that stuff, you know, using the FCA website. But most importantly, I think when our group really started to grow is when we as huddle leaders started to be more real with the kids, to the fact of even like, hey, I'm struggling right now as an adult.
Yeah.
Me being here around you guys has helped me. And for them to hear that and to know like, oh, he doesn't know it all. And to say that too, like, hey, I don't know if I've ever been in this part of the scripture, but we're going to read it. Like, I don't know if I know what it's really saying here. What do you guys think it's saying?
Yeah.
I feel like that has really hit home with more kids, and our attendance has went up because they probably feel like they don't have to know everything, and that the person leading it is just as needs it just as much as they do. Yeah. That's what I think.
Yeah. That vulnerability is huge, right?
Yep.
And being able to be vulnerable.
So. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Luke. This has been great. Even though you're an NDSU alum, we can we can sit down and enjoy time together. So thanks so much, Luke.
Yep. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks again for being part of Stories of His Glory. If today's episode inspired you, take a moment to share it and be sure to follow or subscribe so you won't miss what's coming next. Psalm 96:3 reminds us, to declare His glory among the nations, His wondrous works among all peoples. The field is yours. Now go glorify Him.